I'd hang it to the shirt tail, and then the pocket, open pocket was down. And as I say, there was snow on the ground, and it was right out in front of the chicken house. I asked him what he did with my ring. He didn't know anything about it. And I said, don't you remember I dropped it in your pocket? He said, I knew you dropped something in my pocket, but I didn't know what it was. Well, I said, I guess it's lost out there in the snow, and I'll never find it. Well, that was in the winter time, and when spring came, I was going to go out and hang the horse up, and everything had thawed, and the ground was all soft and soft, and then showed some feet out there for the chickens, and this one chicken had something, and she was just a cackling and carrying on, you know. And I said to my husband, I'd like to know what that old hen's carrying on so out there. And so he went out there, and I went out there too to see. She had my ring. It was falling down the dirt, but she couldn't swallow it. And you know, I told that to somebody, and I don't remember who it was, but then somebody wrote it to Topeka, Kansas, and it came out in Believe It or Not, You Never Lose a Diamond.
Oh, dear.
It was in I got that article around here somewhere, too. But we'd always take our children with us to play cards, you know, that way. Or if they, whoever came to my house, we'd stretch them out on the bed somewhere, and we'd play cards. We played rook in those days. We didn't, or flinch, but mostly rook. Used to play flinch. Before I was married, I'd play flinch with my foster father. I learned not to like flinch. He wouldn't let me win. And I had to be a good sport. That was always a requirement. You couldn't get mad, you know.
Did you have women friends that you did things with? Oh, yes.
I want to show you something else.
Yeah, our neighbors, you know. And this one, she was just like a sister. Her name was Mamie. And I, about a half a mile from where we lived, was two old maid sisters and their mother and a sister that was married. And when my son was born, they brought him a pair of shoes, those little handmade felt shoes. And I was so in love with them that I asked Carrie, one of the sisters, where she got them. She says, I didn't, I made them. So Kate and I made them. And I was just blank, and I said, she said, I'm going to give you that pattern. It's a McCall pattern. She said, I'll give it to you. So she gave me the little pattern, and my son had, if I could find his picture, he's got these little shoes on in his picture.
And these are the shoes?
No, these I made this past year. I made three or four pair of them, and mostly because my younger daughter, she had them too. All the children had them. Then she thought when her children come along that I'd make each one of them one. Well, I'd been ill an awfully lot. And while I could still do these things, this is quite intricate to do. And I never made her any of her children, but she one day, in the past year or so, she said to me one time, Mother, I don't know why you didn't make any of your grandchildren these shoes. She says, you made Betty's children those shoes. Then I said, I didn't. But she said, I did. So when I talked to my daughter, one older daughter later on, I asked her about it. She said, yes, Mother, you made one pair for the first baby, your first grandchild, and then you never made any more. She said, I still have one of Danny's little shoes that I had made. Only I made better flowers in those days. They used to make what you called a little rose. They were exquisite. But that's a lot of work. It's an art, and you know, you have, and so, but this lady here, we were just like sisters. Never having had a sister, I would say she was, you know, her sister-in-law and I were very close friends too. But we had lots of women. And then later on, in years, well, we had a bridge club, and we played bridge, you know, that. And of course, I was always, and when summer comes along, you've got lots to do for there's canning to do. And I did lots of canning because you didn't let the vegetables go to waste out there, and you canned them. And then if you wanted more exotic vegetables, well, I had this friend that lived down across the creek that raised all kinds of stuff, and one of the things she raised was asparagus. Oh, it was delightful. And my husband bought me a pressure cooker, a big one, a canner, pressure canner. And I would can asparagus, corn, peas. I tried to can out of my garden some, but I had this son. I said to them this one time, I had enough peas, I thought I could get about 5 pints. And I would just, yeah. And I said to him, now don't go off somewhere in the morning because I want you to help me. What did I want him to do? I said, I want you to help me pick those peas in the morning or else this evening so I can can them. And my older daughter looked at me kind of funny. She says, Mother, you don't have enough peas out there to can. And I said, what do you mean I don't? I said, I was just out there the morning and they were just right because, Mother, you wouldn't get enough peas out there, she says, to cook the dinner tonight. Well, what happened to them? My son had gone out and he had all his pocket stuff full and then he'd go off and he'd eat these peas all day long or ate all my peas. What are we going to do? It's done. Green beans, I still have a few green beans. But he preferred his vegetables raw. Finally one day I said to the doctor, what's the matter with that young? And I said, he just will not eat his vegetables at the dinner table. He says, well, what's that? I said, I don't know what's the matter with him. But I said, he'll go out in the garden and stand out there and eat them all raw right out of the garden. He said, well, he's got better sense than you have. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, because they're better for him raw than they are cooked. But you had an awful lot to do on the farm. Well, you lived on the farm, but now after 28, we lived in town.
In those early years, what kinds of things would you do with the girlfriend?
Quill. We'd do quilting. We'd have quiltings during the winter time, you know. And this lady here had a quilting party at her house this one time. And she was quite large busted, and she was cooking dinner for how many there were of us there quilting. And, you know, you have a habit of instead of laying your needle down, you stick it in your dress, you know. Well, she had to go to the kitchen for some reason or other, and I have to remember seeing her stick that needle in there, you know. And later on, she couldn't find a needle. Well, we looked, we couldn't find a needle, but everybody's scared to walk. You know, I said, well, don't walk barefooted because, well, it must have been months later, because it was in the summertime, she was taking a bath. And she said, she called me up. She said, I can't get to the doctor. I've got to get to a doctor. And I said, what's the matter? She says, I don't know. And I took a bath and I said, I run my arm off here. There's something in my arm and it's just as sharp as can be and I can't get it. I've got to go to the doctor. This needle had worked its way all the way across her flesh and, over to here. But how lucky it didn't go through her heart or somewhere, you know? But a quilting needle is short. But yeah, I have one up there now that I quilted since I lived here. I've got two more that I'd like to quilt, but I don't know whether I'll get it done or not. Now, way back then, you could the Altar Society, we'd quilt off and on all winter too at the Altar Society. We'd go have it set up someplace, you know, in and I don't know how many times we go and quilt some, you know.
Now, what's the Office Society?
Catholic Church has instead of a AIDS Society or that, they call it the Altar Society. And I know the church or any place that you could set up the quilt up was too cold. So there was a room upstairs over the Farmer State Bank in town they would just let us use it, and it was heated. And we would go up there and we'd quilt. And then, of course, when I was home, we'd always be sewing or be busy doing something, you know, because I learned to make my own clothes and make my children's clothes, my girls. And then one time my husband was big, and by shirts in those days, they didn't make anything big enough, you know. And this one time I thought, you know, I'm going to make him a shirt.
biggest mistake of my life. He wouldn't wear ready-made shirts no more, except work shirts. I made these shirts. I've got a couple brand new ones hanging in there that he never wore.
Were you involved in any other kinds of organizations besides the Autism Society?
Outside of our bridge club, not me. They had other little clubs in town, but I didn't belong to none of them. But after Shirley was born, times are pretty hard in those days. That was depression time, you know. And while my husband had a job, it didn't pay big. And he had this life insurance policy. It was just awfully hard to make ends meet with, you know, to keep it going. And Wasina County, Donovan County, is noted for apples. It's and fruits of any kind, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, any of that kind of stuff, you know, but apples, and more apples than was peaches. And then they had this big apple house where the farmers would bring their apples in, and they had it set up. I don't know where that picture is either. I'll tell you, I've got a picture of me standing there working, grading apples. And you grade, these apples run over a roller, you know, and come down this chute. And as they hit down this chute, well, then you sort out the good ones from the bad ones and what have you, you know. And then they had the lid to a bushel basket, just the lid. And somebody would start out and they would face this lid and make the apples fit beautifully, you know. And then when the basket was full of apples, they'd put this lid on it and it looked beautiful, you know. Well, I learned to be a facer then. But during the Depression, we started out, I think we began, I think working was 25 cents an hour.
You got a job in the apple?
Yeah, I got in the fall. Uh-huh. And this Grandma Clark took care of my children when they come home from school, so I got home from work today in the evening, you know, from Apple House. My husband worked for an oil company when we lived in town, and he was gone sometimes 3 to 5 weeks at a time for a long time. So I went to work at the Apple House.
When was this now?
Well, this would be back about, Shirley was, she's probably in school. She'd been in the 30s, early 30s. But that was for the Depression, you know. And then the next year, the Depression was worse, and our pay dropped down to 15 cents an hour. And the last year I worked for 10 cents an hour. And I never got any use out of that money except I would take and apply it to the insurance payment so that they could pay that insurance without losing their insurance on you. Times were very hard in those days.
What made you decide to stop farming and move into town?
Well, that was back in 1920. Betty was 2.5 or 3. Greg was around 19. They were around 2, 3 years old, and they had what they call a market crash. My husband decided to raise hogs that year because the price of hogs was good. The price of corn and wheat was nothing. So I don't remember now how many hogs that he had, but he fed all the grain to the hogs, and about, I would say, 2, maybe 3 weeks before they were ready to go to market, the market crashed. We lost everything. Might say all we had left was a little bit of broken down furniture, 2 kids and an old Model T Ford. So that we were living on a rented farm at the time. And so we moved into town. In fact, we moved into a house up above my husband's sister that was vacant. We didn't have to pay any rent for it. It was just an empty house on a farm. We lived there for I don't know how long. And then we got our car ready and
We didn't move into any house, and then we stored what little furniture and stuff we had at my folks' place, and we got our own Model T Ford rigged up, and we went to Colorado. And we went to Golden, Colorado. We stopped there and visited some friends, and this old colored man that took care of these two old girls that was from Wathena told Dad he could get him a job. So he got him a job with the city, digging ditches for water pipes. And Golden is a college town. And you couldn't rent a house for love nor money if you had a child. If you had a dog, or two or three dogs, you could rent an apartment or a house, but you couldn't, not in a college town. You could. So the man that Dad was working for, his boss, Dad told him, I guess he'd have to give up the job because we couldn't find any place to live. And he said, well, would you live in a tent? And we said, well, that's what we were living in now. But we had a car camp, and it was very small. And they had this city park with a ballpark, and then the little creek run along the edge, and it was quite flat ground in there. And he said, well, he had a big 16 by 16 tent that he didn't use very often. And if we wanted, we could take that and set it up out there. So we did. We set that up out there at this park. And we had camp cots that we slept, you know, and of course the children slept in the car while we were traveling. But when we were there, then we had cots and everything. And the ground was hard, and you could sweep it just like a hard floor, you know. And the children played in this little trickle along there, just little trickles of water, and they played along there, you know. And we stayed there until Labor Day. It got cold, began to get bad. So we headed back for Kansas. The fact of the matter was, we were headed for California at the time. So we worked that summer there, and then we got as far as we were over the Burford Pass. And I forget the name of the little town at the bottom of Burford Pass. And we met several cars coming back from California. They said they had that hoof and mouth disease out here so bad, and that there was no milk for children, and all they gave us this awful story. So we got scared and headed back for Kansas. So we got to the top of Burford Pass about, and it was dark and snowing. So we decided to camp along the side of the road there, but there was a big building there where I guess the workers stayed in there. They had beds and big stoves and things in there. And we were, Dad had gone up to see if he could get some water. And the lady came out and she said, you going to try to stay there? And he said, well, yeah, we can't go on any farther tonight. And she said, well, those little children will freeze out there. Well, they wouldn't have. We would have. She said, there's nobody in this big building but my husband and myself. The workmen are not known around. And you're welcome to come inside and stay and bring your food in and you cook inside. So we did. We stayed there inside there that night. Then we went on down as far as Canyon City, Colorado. And we stayed overnight in some house there. We rented a little house overnight a few days. And it was right in the heart of apple picking time. And they were paying fair wages for people to pick apples. So he got the job at this one, and the man told him he could pitch a tent with the car in the orchard there. And the kids had a ball playing in the irrigation ditches and stuff. And he picked apples high in a tree where he could climb, and I picked them from the lower part, you know. We made fairly good money there, and nothing exciting, but we went back to Kansas with a lot more money than we left with, because we left there broke, you know. But anyway, we went back to Kansas, and then, as I say, the times kept getting harder and harder. That was the biggest mistake we ever made, was to go back and not keep coming to California, because since I've been out here and had friends out here that lived through it, they said a lot of it was untrue. They just had so many people out here, they were just discouraging people to come to California. So then we went back to Wathena, and the house that my foster parents lived in, they were on the verge of losing it. And in this process, well, we rented the small house from them for a couple of 3 years. But as I say, times was bad. Grandpa had no work anymore, my foster father. And they didn't have money enough to keep up their payments on their mortgage. So the woman that owned had the mortgage was going to foreclose on them. In the meantime, my husband's mother had passed away, and he had some money from her estate, not a whole lot, but he had some. And we hoarded that, and then wasn't too long, his father passed away. Then he got a settlement from his father's estate, of which we hadn't bought anything with it. Well, I would never tell him what he should do with it. That was up to him. But he liked my folks so well, and they were good to me, and he was good to them. So he said to me one time, "Why don't we take over their mortgage?" I said, "That's up to you, and I don't want to ever say that I asked you to do it, because I didn't." So we took over their mortgage and took over the property, and then they lived there as long as they lived, rent free. And then it was a double house. They like that's the front house, and then there was a back porch here, and this was a small house back here, all connected right here. This front porch was off of this kitchen window, and this went into a back porch, you know. And we lived there for a long time and then after we bought the place, this part over here had two bedrooms upstairs. So we moved into that part, and Grandma and Grandpa moved back here where we were. And we lived there till we came out here. And my husband worked for that oil company for years, DX oil company. And he drove a little truck, you know, and he was a maintenance man, and he'd go from old town to town, sometimes western Kansas, so a lot of them in Missouri, or Chillicothe in Missouri, and all down towards St. Louis, and I don't know, all kinds of places down in there, places I'd never been, though. But as he got a better truck, then he could come home weekends. He'd be gone a week at a time. Before that, he'd be gone 4 and 5 and 6 weeks at a time. And he never liked traveling. He was a homebody. He'd come home, I'd want to go out somewhere to dinner, and he didn't want to go out. He'd had all the restaurant food he wanted.
What was that like when you'd have all the decision making to do during those times when he was gone, and then
that was hard, really very hard, because when he came home, I was tired, and I thought that he should make a few of the decisions for the children, but he had no patience with the children. He had a habit of if the children would say they wanted to go do so-and-so, no. Didn't know what it was about or nothing about. No. Well, now, very diplomatically, I got to squirm in there somewhere and tell him they do it all the time. What they were doing was nothing but school things. They were going down to the school to maybe practice basketball. They were going down to the school to do something, whatever. Nothing that was, you know, something that they did all the time. Well, he thought they should stay home because he was there. Well, they were tickled at the seam and all that, but then it was over with, you know. They wanted to go play. And that was one of the things but I finally, after so long a time, that one time he came home, he said, "Now look, I know that I make the wrong decisions because I don't know what's going on. You know, and don't send them to me. After this, I'm gone too long and too much. You let them do just what they do, except there would be times that it'd be necessary." Now, like this one time, after my foster father died, my foster mother didn't want to live in her part of the house alone. She insisted that one of the children stay nights in there with her. Well, the older children wouldn't do it. They did it time or two, but they didn't want to. They didn't want to be in their own bed, and then where they could do their study and what. Well, the little one, she was all right with her. She could go and stay with Grandma, because Grandma let her get away with murder. And if I would correct Shirley, she'd run into Grandma right quick. Well, I had no control over things. Well, this went on for I don't know how many months, and finally my husband stepped in and said, now look, this has got to stop. Nobody can control that child. If I say something to her, she starts crying and runs into Grandma. This has got to stop. I said, then you'll have to stop it, because there's nothing I can do. I don't know what else to do, because I didn't know what to do. So this one night, I don't know what Shirley did, something naughty, and she jumped up from the table crying and ran to Grandma, and he went right after her. Well, and he told Mother at the time, he told her, he said, well, we're going to have to stop this, her sleeping in here nights like this, and she's got to stay home and eat at her own home. We're responsible for her, and we have to raise her the best we can, and we're not doing anything in raising it. She's just getting out of hand. Well, my mother didn't like it. She eventually, later on, we didn't know it at the time, she didn't know, but she said we put her out of the house, but we didn't. She was mad, and so she went out and got an apartment somewhere else and said we put her out of the house. Well, it wasn't so. And somebody else took it up and was spreading it around. Another friend of mine that knew the story, and she said she let it be known that it wasn't true. But at any rate, we got Shirley back under control again. But there were times it was hard when he was out on the road like that, you know. Right? And there were times that he had to step in and assert his authority, you know.
He said that he helped you with the wash and he did the dishes.
Oh,
that.
He was
up.
He always helped me whenever he was around. He was that picture I showed you how he's doing dishes. Yeah, he always helped with anything there was to do. And men's work or stuff for outside when he was around, because when he wasn't around, the children and I had to do it. But I never mowed the lawn in my life, and I never outside of working in my garden a little bit. But the hard gardening, getting the ground ready, he always did that. But I never had to ask him to do anything. He just automatically did what had to be done. Many men, I had this son-in-law one time. I was out there helping my older daughter with a baby this time that was long, and I had brought all of the trash cans, and my son-in-law, he never touched nothing. He never touched nothing. And this one day, I knew he was about ready to go to work, so I set the two trash cans right square down in front of the door. Big long, 6 foot some tall. He stepped over and went out and got about as far as the back kitchen door, and I called to him. I said, why did you step over those trash cans? Well, he said, I supposed to. I had them there for a reason. I said, I did. I wanted you to take them out as you went to the garage and empty them. Well, why didn't I say so? I wouldn't have, my husband had seen me, he picked them up and took them with him. I never picked up clothes, dirty clothes, after my husband in my life. Never. When he took a bath and changed his clothes, he always took them to the washing machine. He cleaned up the bathroom when he was through. When he took off his clothes, he hung them up. Never had to hang them. But some people are not like that. But my son is. My son, he's just like his father was. But he had a lesson. He was about 12 years old, and I was going to have a bridge club. We lived about as far as, it was about a block and a half from the school. And that was after I'd had that sickness, that last one, of 34. And we had a two-bedrooms upstairs, and but we had the floor furnace was downstairs. And I would let the children dress around the floor furnace in the awful cold weather, and then my husband fixed a rack in the bathroom back of the door where they could hang their nightclothes up. And they were supposed to hang them up every morning. Some mornings they didn't. Some mornings Greg, he was the worst. Well, this particular morning, I had warned them to hang their clothes up. And I went in there to put up the bridge table, and here was all Greg's clothes around the furnace. Well, there's only a block and a half from school, so I went right straight to the telephone, and I called up there, and I told the principal to send Greg's clothes home immediately. Well, it was before noon. It wasn't even noon recently, you know. And he come running, he ran home, he was out of breath, he thought I was sick again. I said, no, but I sure am sick of this mess around the furnace.
he looked at me and he said, "Mother, do you mean to tell me you called me home just for that?" I said, "Yes, I did. I told you I was having bridge club today. I don't want those ladies, eight strange ladies coming in the house in your pajamas and bedroom slippers and everything laying around the furnace." He picked them up, and that was